This Here Is Fish Fry. I'm your host, Amelia Dalton from EEJournal.com, and this week I'm coming to you live from the 2014 EE Live Conference and Expo at the San Jose Convention Center. Oh, excuse me. I didn't mean to be in your way. I'm sorry. Oh, over here? Well, okay. Apparently, I've overstayed my welcome, and these union stagehands are giving me the hairy eyeball. And yes, I've now been told that the conference actually ended yesterday. Ah, well, that makes a lot of sense. So, I better get to it. The biggest theme at this year's show, by far, was IoT. Safety in connected devices. Security in connected devices. Software for connected devices. All right, that's all fine and good. But what about designing IoT? What then? Sure, we can talk all about the value add of this tool or that peripheral or this module over here, but what we have at the end of the day are the challenges of actually getting the engineering work done. So, my guest today is Matt Osminer, Director of Engineering at Cardinal Peak. Matt presented a talk at EE Live this year called The Best Management and Technical Practices for Engineering an IoT Product. Let's sit down with Matt and chat about what engineering an IoT product is really like. Thanks so much for joining me, Matt.
Thank you for having me.
So, Matt, what do you think are the main design differences between designing for a traditional product and an IoT product?
So, I think from the projects that we've seen, the largest challenges tend to be really in balancing the deeply embedded environment against the more resource-rich internet environment. When we're looking at cost savings for mass-produced devices and on the embedded side, that usually means reduced memory and resources and things against these heavyweight internet protocols. But the benefit there, of course, is you get these frameworks and things that let these developers move really fast on the server side. You know, that's certainly one of the big design challenges that we see quite a bit. Security is also quite a challenge when it comes to IoT devices. I think today, I liken it to we're in a 1996 meets, you know, technology has finally arrived kind of IoT, if you remember back in the day when I had a refrigerator that would tell me when the milk's out, right? So, you know, we're kind of on a simpler curve, I think, right now. But when you start talking about the future here and leading to some of the more ubiquitous networking and cross-networking technologies that are being kicked around, BLE and Zigbee, Z-Wave, and these things, I think that security thing is going to get even more challenging than it already is. From more of a management perspective, just to detour into that a little bit, finding people that can talk embedded and understand the challenges there, but also talk server and internet side and kind of balance the challenges and things there is also very difficult. And then managing a team, you know, to get that happy balance, if you will, between the two is certainly a management challenge.
So, Matt, going back to your talk a little bit here, what do you think are the biggest challenges and the best practices for designing for IoT? Give me the top three of each.
So I've touched a little bit on kind of the biggest challenges. Security, hands down, is one major challenge. And, you know, there's a lot of internet technologies, like I said, that you could tap for that today. TLS, SSL is certainly a good baseline for anyone. But again, I think as things go forward, we're going to be looking a little more at that. One of the other big challenges, just from a product perspective, talking product management a little bit, making it simple for end users. A lot of these devices require some sort of sign-on and configuration, and most people aren't technically savvy if you're really talking about making this product ubiquitous for everyone to use. We've spent significant amounts of time that we never would have imagined just trying to simplify that process for customers. I'll throw props to the Google Chromecast team in particular. They've done a fantastic job simplifying it down to a few button presses, right? That wasn't a small feat on their part. The other major challenge, aside from security and kind of getting the user interface and things going, is again balancing all those resources, making sure that I'm monitoring my costs in terms of operating these devices, both in bandwidth and just, you know, the hardware cost itself. Kind of sort of tied in with that also is the operations aspects of this. I have a cable TV background, so I'm used to 14 million set-tops in a network the company controls. That was really hard. Now I'm talking about putting millions of devices out into the wild, effectively, on who knows what network and everything in between. So trying to come up with areas to successfully operate those products is definitely one of the best practices, right? Focusing on operations up front with product design is certainly really key. You want to make sure that you can troubleshoot these. You want to make sure you have firmware updates that don't hit the whole population at once so you can kind of slow roll and make sure everything's good. That's certainly one of the best practices I could offer. And really all the best practices are all about planning, in my opinion. So again, planning for security, looking ahead, how am I going to secure not only the base channel, but how am I going to pair these devices with a customer and make sure that nobody else can hijack their thermostat in their house, for example. Certainly, these devices on a Wi-Fi network internet environment are high-profile hacker challenges, so having someone break in and turn off my heat in the middle of the winter and have my house show up, you know, on the frozen garage on the internet kind of photo thing is just not a good thing. The third best practice that I can think of is really keeping your customer experience in mind. And again, this goes back to product design, making sure that you have your customer's needs and problems first and foremost center. This is good for any product, by the way. But again, to the added challenge of trying to make this easy to use for non-technical people is key. You want to look at the responsiveness of your application from, say, a mobile app to a thermostat. Does the customer expect that it's going to change right away, or is it okay to delay? Those kinds of decisions up front will guide your communication strategies, will guide your bandwidth costs, will guide your security models. Yeah, those are probably the three best practices I can offer. And again, they're all kind of in the planning stage of things. Setting a good plan is very key here.
So, Matt, recently I saw that Cisco says there'll be 50 billion IoT devices by 2020. Now, what do you think of that prediction?
I think that's a very interesting prediction. It certainly depends on how you define IoT device. If you count a cell phone, which I could make a great argument for, yeah, I think that number is very realistic in terms of just current growth trends and other things. I think what would be more interesting to see, though, is can people monetize it enough to drive it? If there isn't money to be made here, nobody's going to sustain it. Few things go for free. The other interesting thing that I've been kind of watching a little bit, and this has really more been Google Glass driven, which maybe isn't quite so much an IoT product, but, you know, will there be a social enigma around this or a social acceptance barrier, a fear factor, if you will, that people need to get over? You know, my front door lock is now connected to my cell phone. Who could drive up and just spoof me and get into my house without even trying? You know, I think there's a little bit of public acceptance that's going to have to come around before that number will be achieved. But, you know, from a technical perspective, sure, why not?
So, Matt, we just discussed earlier, you're learning to build guitars? Tell me more about that.
Well, I suppose you could say it's a nice balance of using my engineering brain without having to do anything terribly technical. There's something very peaceful and rewarding about working with your hands, creating a beautiful instrument that sounds amazing and people really enjoy listening to it and playing it. For me, that just became some sort of non-technical outlet, but still kind of satisfies my creativity and my engineering side.
I love it. Well, I think that's all I have time for. Thank you so much for joining me today, Matt. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
And a pleasure speaking with you too, Amelia. Thank you.
All right, now it's time for Amelia's top five highlights of this year's EE Live 2014 Conference and Expo. And now, in no particular order, number one, cotton candy. Yes. Now, folks, sometimes under the giant bright lights of a show like this, after I have trudged I don't know how many miles in high-heeled boots, because I'm a girl, after all, I need some sugar. They had the Fantastical Theater of Engineering Innovation front and center of the expo show floor this year, which hosted a whole slew of cool events, including a cotton candy machine. Yes, I ate three bundles of that insulation-esque candy, and I probably would have eaten more, but once they noticed my name tag, the gig was up. Number two, in that same pavilion, was the Why Does a Quadcopter Fly? Rules of Thumb for Mechanical Design session hosted by Adam Carlson. This session was all about the mechanical design of quadcopters. Think of it as a mechanical engineering class for electrical engineers. Super cool. Filled with more equations than you could shake a stick at. Hosted by an actual aerospace mechanical engineer and even included a slideshow of really terribly designed quadcopters. We all learned how to spot bad structural engineering pretty quickly. Now, great. I have another hobby. Wonderful. Number three, free good coffee. Yep. There was this rotating, first it's at Synopsys, then it's Wind River, weirdly with the same barista, coffee stand that kept me over-caffeinated the whole time. Number four, and this may be a high and a low, I'm not really sure where to put it, but Michael Barr's keynote on Tuesday entitled Killer Apps, Embedded Software's Greatest Hit Jobs. Now, if you weren't scared by the global ramifications of Al Gore's keynote a couple years ago, well, this one, yeah. Hold on to your hats, ladies and gentlemen. We're in for a wild ride. Literally. Michael talked all about how issues in software caused the Scud missile debacle in the Middle East, how it killed people being treated for cancer by a radiation machine, and how, maybe, just maybe, issues in Toyota's source code caused Toyota's unintended acceleration issues that have been in the news for the past couple years. Scary and kind of cool. Whew. I've included a link below the player for more information about this keynote. Check it out. Not at night, and definitely not alone. Number 5, swag. But this time, not for me. You see, my producer, Lara, won one of the biggest prizes at this year's show, a Wii U from the AMD booth. I was with her when she got the call, and dude, I just won the Wii! So yes, a little bittersweet, because yes, I totally would have loved to take that gaming system home, but I was super happy for her. So, for all of you engineers out there, people do win. It's not just a clever marketing ploy. Oh wait, yes it is. But people do win. People do win. I have been told that apparently I need to leave. I have to leave. So there we go. Stay tuned to EE Journal for more 2014 EE Live coverage coming up in the next couple weeks. Oh, right, before we go, it's time for a little EE Journal social media message. If you haven't gotten around to liking us on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. You can also check out our tweets at EEJournalTFM and join our circle on Google+. We also have a brand new YouTube channel chock full of all kinds of techie awesomeness, including a Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by yours truly. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can also grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes store. Well, that's all there is for this week's Fish Fry. Remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your hometown, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of April 4th, 2014, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.